Well, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the second of our advanced evening seminars for NLP alumni and graduates. I'm Tom Dotz, the president of NLP California, and it's my special delight tonight to introduce to you Charles Faulkner, whom I think everyone here knows and has trained with before, with maybe one or two exceptions. Charles, for those of you who haven't had the pleasure of being in a room with him while he's doing what he does so well, is one of the people who really does NLP. He does it in the original sense of NLP, in that he really models out new forms of excellence in human behavior and transfers them successfully into people who want to be able to do that particular skill with the success and the effectiveness of the experts in the field. So, it is my pleasure tonight to introduce Charles Faulkner, NLP trainer and artist, as you can see, extraordinaire.
Good evening.
We like this.
Yeah. That's a behavioral flexibility drill. So, are all of you here richly familiar with something known as programmation neurolinguistique? Or some form of that, yes, neurolinguistic programming. Yes?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Well, when I get to talking about this subject, I go, well, what is it? And of course, anyone who's master practitioner candidate, someone wants to become an official neuro-linguistic programmer, goes, they say, well, it's about study of human excellence, and it's making people's maps of the world, discovering them, and so forth. And the actual graduates, they go, well, I don't know, because they've been around me a while. And the definition, somebody usually comes by at a certain point, appeared in the original book, to say the book co-authored by John Grinder, Richard Bandler, Judith Delosier, Robert Diltz. And in that book, it was called The Study of the Structure of Subjective Experience, to which I would make only one small addition, The Study of the Structures of Subjective Experience. That NLP, in my claim, draws on several complete and full models of how to appreciate human experience. And it draws on the reframing model, which is derived from the family therapy and systems thinking, the idea of noticing the values that exist among different people in a system within a certain individual as a system, how these relate to each other and these hierarchies of values. It relates to ideas of value clarification, though, being the modern forward-looking people we are, we don't usually like to look back, but in fact it draws on that. It draws on that idea that there are hierarchies of values and relationships and systems, if you will. NLP also draws on the idea of outcomes or goals, targets, different people call them different things. The basis of this is decision theory, which is to say strategies. How is it that we strategize, the how, of getting to where we want to go? And once again, this pre-existed NLP and was described quite well in a book by George Miller, Carl Priblum, and Eugene Galate, in which they described a TOTE, which was a two-part process, one part of which was the goal, what are you going for, and the other part of the process is how are you getting to that goal. And in this description, which Grinder and Bandler and Robert Diltz and others borrowed on, is they pointed out that this would be, if you were to say, be building a house, that there is a TOTE for building a house, the goal to build a house. How do you go about building the house? Well, you can contract people, architects and so forth, builders, could design it yourself, you could draw on different sources. But the point is, overall, there's some larger idea the house will be built. And that's smaller than that is the idea of, well, how am I going to outfit the kitchen, for example? I don't need all things in the kitchen. I'll need to get the wall material and so forth. And what is that going to look like? What's that going to be in terms of specifications? And how am I going to do that, or how is my contractor going to do that? On down all the way till you've got the person who's fitting the pipes, are the pipes fitted together, to the carpenter or cabinet maker who is taking a single nail, each single nail, obviously, we can do one at a time, and putting the nail there, setting it, and then hammering it and looking at the nail and seeing, did the nail go all the way in? And if not, then running the process again, hitting the nail, the goal being the completion of the nail in, the fitting of the pipes, the design of the bathroom, the design of each room up to the finished house. Both of these models, and there's several others that NLP draws on, but I want to start with both of these models, whether it's the value clarification, a hierarchy, if you will, bigger values, more overarching values, down to particular values like, is the room lit in a way you like? Are the sounds around you, are you enjoying those? Is each of the things that I'm saying making sense? Is, in a sense, recapitulating the same process. That is that to test the value of, is the coffee good, is an evaluation. And that hammering the nail, that one single nail, is a tote, if you will, a strategy, the goal, get that nail in flush in a way that looks good for whatever the requirements of that wall are, outside wall or inside finished carpentry, whatever it is, and hammering it, and is it the way I want? If it's not, I hammer it again. If the coffee's not just the way I want, perhaps I warm it up, perhaps I add sugar to it, or somehow alter it, a process, so that it meets a certain valuation and completes the process in a certain way. And that these step up at each level to higher and higher orders until you're talking about, perhaps in one case, a completed meeting, a mediation, a negotiation, where a number of people got together and coffee happened to have been served. Very small evaluation, but nevertheless, we know that the little things count. Up to the building of a house, the house being what you want, but you want to know that the nails that were driven into those walls were driven in a way that makes that house something that's going to last and be of value and be what you want. This idea has existed in nature for a long time. I'm sure it has been eons that people have like looked out upon trees and gone, have you noticed how the little tree is just like the big tree, only little? Or you've noticed how a tree will then branch off, and that the branch, if you took the branch off, it looks just like the tree. And then branch off, and it looks like a tree and branch, until you finally get out to the fir, if you example, and it's branching off in just the way, little tiny twigs, if you will, branching off in the same pattern that they branched off of the trunk of the original tree. Well, leave it to a mathematician to find a name for this. Mandelbrot was working at IBM and had been wondering about this for a long time. A lot of people have. And he got to name it, though. It's an interesting thing. It was in nature the whole way. If you look at the eddy in a cup of coffee when you drop a bit of cream into it, and then you look at the map in the evening of the world and they're showing you the hurricane, you go, look at those, they look alike. And what they're known as is fractals. And I take this time with it to have you realize, and a number of you I'm sure know what fractals are, they're more in consciousness of people than ever been, that they're not simply computer-generated entertainment. That they were noticed because of their existence and importance in the way we organize our world. That a seashell, which I've drawn up here, is a fractal. That is that if you got the seashell with a little baby, whatever it is, in the little baby seashell, and you just caught it on that first cycle, that first turn around, which would look just about like that, that tiny shell, the kind of thing that I would find when I was a young boy up on the Fox River in northern Michigan, and we'd be looking for crayfish and stuff next to the shore. A number of you probably did the same thing along the shore here, and you find a little shell. That shell bears remarkable similarity in shape to a larger shell. And that the same picture, the same kind of structure, repeats over and over again as it twists around each turn of that nautilus shell. That's a fractal. In the same way that the tree is. Trees are fractals, as each of those branches branching off the trunk recapitulate the same shape as the trunk with its branching. You can really see this. You go up into the redwood forests in particular, and the very stout redwood will stick straight up and have stout branches pointing off. But every once in a while, they'll get interrupted. I don't know how it happens, lightning or something. And you'll see that the tree suddenly goes off in other directions. And the branches that come off of those will also do the same thing. It's a fractal. So the idea is fractals are all around us. And they are a very simple pattern that repeats and allows a richly complex structure to be created. And the noticing that George Miller and Carl Pribram and Eugene Galante did with their work matches, in a way, the work of Mandelbrot about the idea that you can also look at human experience as having what we could term fractals in it. And what I want to point out is that a number of the models of NLP that it draws on are fractal in design. That is, you can have a strategy for getting here tonight, driving through the traffic, and you'll use that same structure on selecting whether you came here tonight. In other words, the decision process is used to find the right exits for you, to find the way to get in here, even like to find which driveway to enter on, bear a resemblance in structure to decisions to come here tonight, decisions to study this or do something else. What this is known technically in mathematics is self-similarity of structure with invariance to scale. That's the math, yes, that's the math portion of the evening, yeah. Self-similar structures, like in the shell, like in the process, you have a goal and you have a process for getting there. Whether it's coffee flavored the way you want, finding the right exit, deciding to do this tonight, deciding which movie to go to, deciding what career to make. So that as it moves up, there's a similarity of structure, not of content. At least, as John Grinder says, we hope that mowing the lawn and making love are different experiences for you. That is John Grinder. A man who never mows his own lawn.
And that implies
I think he knows about some experiences quite well. A lot of them. And noticing that there's an underlying structural similarity. So for those that haven't thought about this too much yet, what I'm going to do is invite you to notice what are the similarities between deciding to come here tonight. So it was a goal, and then you had to go through a process. And deciding to take some course. For a number of you, it's an NLP course. It could be a massage therapy course. It could be a naturopathic course. It is important to me that you pick the course that you took and that you actually did because you came here tonight. We want them to be the similarity of, yes, you did this, and yes, you did the other one. The content, however, can vary any way you want, and I'd like you to compare those two, that is, how you decided to come here tonight and some course that you participated in terms of their structure. So both of them had an outcome, yes? both of them had evidence for whether or not you had fulfilled that outcome. I mean, if you didn't get here tonight and you wanted to, you're still driving around looking for the place. You haven't finished that process yet. So there'll definitely be some kind of evidence procedure. And as we know in NLP, the evidence procedures are preferably sensory-based, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, obviously if it was a meal or something, olfactory, gustatory as well. And there are going to be certain values that are fulfilled by this. That is, you know, you could have gone to a movie, or as the old TV ad used to say, could have had a V8. So there's something that made this the experience at this point that met certain values, or what is sometimes known as criteria, for both experiences, which these are different. Recall the one here is tonight, the meeting tonight, tonight's lecture, and the other was some larger, because we're talking about self-similarity with invariance to scale. The scale here is time. The scale is also, so time is one of the variables, also the importance of it. Most people would say, well, if I commit to a course that takes a year and I do go several weeks or weekends or full time, that's obviously a greater commitment of effort and so forth than it would be to take an evening out and discover something. So there's two ways in which it's scaled up. So we're going to have you look at what's the same about these. Now, the other variable, as I said, is how one does that. Now, when I'm talking about this, just to remind those of you who haven't done this in a little while, this is not how you got here. Coming here tonight, the decision to come here tonight is more what steps did you go through to decide that? Did you look at alternatives, for example? Did you call up some friends and go, are you going to be there? Or was there nothing else on your calendar? It was just default. You just did it. Well, I want to entertain the idea that there are a number of ways, and I'm going to symbolically draw three arrows, but your step could have been five steps. It could have been two steps and so forth. However many steps it was that you went through a process in which this became what you decided to do with this evening, your outcome. In the same way, and it may have been a number of steps, may have been a few steps, you decided to take some other course, basic NLP or some personal development, perhaps some management course, university, and you went through a process of deciding to do that. So what I'm going to invite you to do is to look around you and find, you know, people you're attracted to, repelled from, and pick one from each category. Just don't tell them which one they are. Okay, well, if you like both of them, you can do that, but still don't tell them which one they are. So, and we're going to take 10, maybe 15 minutes, not that long. I want you to, like, really get on it. And here's how you're going to do it. For instance, John, you're going to think to yourself for your own examples, and I'm hoping you're making some notes on this on your own paper, because you want to think, okay, coming here tonight, what's your outcome? And you make a note about that. You might do that right now. Make your own note about, so what was important to me? What was my goal fulfillment? Like seeing the finished product the way I want, hearing it the way I want. What was your outcome in coming here tonight? And how would you know if you got it? That would be the evidence. And these are for you, so you can kind of do it in shorthand for yourself in some way that lets you know, because you're going to be sharing this with other people in your group. It's like, so what would you want to get by coming here tonight? How will you know if you've got it? And the other thing is the criteria, the values that'll be fulfilled by tonight. Give another example, for instance. I see all of us tonight are wearing shoes. It's a less of a choice than it used to be in certain cultures. And for various reasons, you picked those shoes over other shoes. That is that, you know, shoes that they went with your outfit, so they fulfilled the value of aesthetic, or perhaps that they were comfortable, perhaps that they were the only shoes that were clean or the ones that had not were being resold. In other words, certain kind of value criteria would be fulfilled. Just like when hitting the nail flush, yes, you want to see it flush. What's important about that is the look of it or the fact you know that the two pieces of wood are now solidly joined together. So what value is being fulfilled by that? In terms of having your food, your coffee taste right, to just give you the other part of the example, is of course that then you'll want to drink it, it'll be pleasing to you, and sort of give you an edge of alertness for the process. And in the same way, you go over to the course that you took that was of a larger length, a couple of months, maybe a year, 2 years, and what values were fulfilled by that course? That is, what was important about taking that course? Opened up a new career opportunity, allowed you to meet with like-minded people. And once again, there can be multiple, as you've noticed, multiple criteria for anything. A simple cup of coffee can have the flavor that you want, the degree of warmth to warm you inside, the alertness you get from it, something to do with your hands so that you don't look nervous. Something to create community with other people, camaraderie. All of these could be going on, for example. Just like you putting the nail in, it could be the aesthetic of it, the joining of the wood, the quality that that gives to what it is you're building. So for these two experiences, note what's important to you about each of those. And now I'll drop down, and what did you do in the process of making these two decisions? That is, in order to come here tonight, what did you do when you first saw a sheet of paper about this? Somebody might have called you up. It was mentioned the last time that you were here or somewhere else. And what did you do? Did you go and look at your calendar? Did you think, well, I'd like to do that? Or you're going, I wonder if that'll be worthwhile. I'll call Tom Dodson. So there might have been processes in here that you went through in order to make that choice. In the same way, you heard about some course or somebody showed you it or told you, you know, wow, you really should do this. It's a great thing. And you went through a series of steps to do that. You might have quizzed the person, well, what do you think it's a great thing about? So a step would have been having a conversation with them. And then you move on, and then you went out and you thought about it a while, and you compared your life against how it would be if you had the course or something. In other words, a series of steps that you went through in order to decide. It may even have been, in the terms of the larger course, that at first you decided not to do it. And then somebody else came and said that you thought it would be a good idea. Or you read a book, or you saw a demonstration of something, or experienced something. And then, this really is. So in terms of the arrows you see here, is it might have been several iterations where you went, no, I don't want to do that. No, well, that's kind of interesting. And then you went, I'm going to do that. And once again, in your own shorthand, is to make some note about how it is that you remember that you did the process. Obviously, we're not interested in every single step, but the sense of what you went through to do that process. All right, so this is a setup for an exercise. One of the three of you is sharing to discover the veracity, the accuracy, the verifiability of what I'm talking about. I'm saying, okay, we're taking two of what I consider to be the seven models, if you will, or ways of organizing experience that NLP draws on. Of course, you're going to ask me what the other ones are, and just representational systems, there's metaprograms, there's metaphor, there's the language models, and so forth. Let's just start with these two and test, is this a fractal model that's being used? We're taking something, a very short-term decision in terms of one evening of 365 in any given year. We're comparing it against a course that committed you, say, at least 6 months or so, and better part of a year, perhaps 2 years, and find out how are they the same if you use this template to find out the outcomes, the evidence, the criteria, and what you did in both cases. How are they the same? In other words, is there some evidence for this idea that the small turn around the conch shell and then later on a larger one, which would represent more time and more commitment, that in fact there is such a thing? So let's test that. Just take like 10, 15 minutes. We'll see how you're doing with this. I'll check in with you and your groups. Just look around and pick yourself some people to have some fun with for a few minutes here and find out, is this some to this or not? What have you discovered? I mean, I'll be more specific. Is the concept, the fact actually in nature of fractals, and I'm very excited because as I looked up here at this wonderful bouquet, these flowers, we see fractals. This is, all right, there we go. It's actually, this one's even better here. That you see that the shape of this, and if it went down further, you'd see the same shape as recapitulated in each leaf. And the leaves get smaller, and you see so that this little piece up here of the top of the leaf looks just shape-wise, and even in terms of the number of offshoots, is 1, 2, 3, 4, like 5, 6, 7, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, is the same shape. And flowers, like the chrysanthemum here, roses, this is the fractal nature. Nature has fractals, a very, very easy and efficient way to build a pattern in nature. Now, the question we have is that this idea that there may be fractal nature in the patterns of the models that NLP draws on, is, do you think there's any accuracy to this claim? Any quality? What is your response to that? I've asked you to make some comparisons here. Yes?
I'm having trouble differentiating between patterns in general and fractal patterns. How is it that the fractal patterns, because I'm thinking back to the first weekend of the Prac Track, the first thing we learned was you look for patterns.
Right.
It's a lot of what we do, pattern recognition. How does the fractals differentiate, how is there a difference between other patterns?
It's a good question, and I'm going to make up an answer now. Well, I mean, because I haven't thought deeply about this, but if I were to answer you, I think that it has to do that fractals in much of human experience are like meta patterns, so that there may be only two steps in your strategy of decision sometimes. I'm hungry, pizza, you know, and then other times you'll be going, well, I want to do this, do I want to not want to do this? You go talk to people, you try to find ways about it, you read some books, you go, you know, you worry, stay up all night worrying about it or something. But in the end, you can still describe the process of decision making as a particular goal, a series of steps, short or long, that you want to do, and you either decide to do it or you don't. So the idea of a particularized outcome and a process to do it remain constant. So the meta pattern or the tote would remain constant in that. I think that would be an example of, and the idea that whether you're testing for a cup of coffee or the meal or the relationship or where you're living, you're still using criteria all the way up. So the pattern, the type of criteria, the number of criteria may shift greatly from the simple meal. You might have more criteria about the meal than you the relationship, or vice versa. But that you are testing criteria at each of those would be the meta pattern, that there's criteria for every decision we make or evaluation that we make. Yeah.
You chose two different situations where the two outcomes are very close. It's just the difference in size of time and I think.
So you think we're hearing that I may have stacked the deck in a certain direction. That.
No, that's not what I mean.
Okay.
To answer your question, maybe when the goals, the outcomes are similar, we have the same pattern, and we can say we have the same fractal.
I don't think so. I mean, I hear that. That no, I don't think that the goal, the theory behind this, the idea, if you will, the model called the fractal model, would say that it should be invariant of scale, which is to say that it wouldn't matter whether it was the scale being time, for example. It wouldn't matter whether it was a decision made in a minute, like, you know, I need paper, buy that paper, let's go, we got to get to this meeting, versus, you know, I'm going to buy this company, you know, or I'm going to move to California.
Some of them are buying something. That's what I mean.
Well, I'm saying, but if you also did moving to California as an example, which would be a very life-changing decision, that in both cases the meta pattern is that there's an outcome in both cases. I want to get the paper, and I want to get some place to live. I mean, so the claim anyway of the model is that there's an invariance. Yeah.
Which is, you know, both of these have essentially the same context.
Mm-hmm.
A training experience in drastically different scale,
mm-hmm.
but the same context. And some of what I'm sort of checking out is the sense of, as I change the context greatly, my decision approach and process for coming tonight versus something radically different.
So stop it.
Okay.
Well, the point, I'm requesting that you stop a moment, because you're right. I did restrict the context, the domain. Why? Because you want to restrict we're tests here. This is not scientific testing, but it's at least testing a model. So if we're claiming invariance of scale, let's test it along the variability of time and importance first. And, I mean, if it falls apart there, why bother to check anything else out? If it holds together there, well, then let's start checking across contexts. So my question still on the table is there an invariance or is there not an invariance with regard to this meta pattern called decisions and values when you're making something as simple as one evening choice versus something that will affect a year? And what reaction, what did you find, what did you not find? They were similar. Well, okay, now the thing is a meta pattern here. Check for similarity. So they both had outcomes in both cases. You had evidence in both cases for if you'd get it. You had criteria in both cases. Okay. Were they the same kinds of outcomes, evidences, and criteria, for example? And how would we decide they were the same kinds? You could do that in terms of sensory-based, non-sensory-based, for example. That would be a great divide. You could do it linguistically in terms of were they sensory-based language? Were they adjectives in each case, adverbs? Were they nouns, nominalizations? Did the classes stay the same in terms of looking for a pattern? So, for instance, you came here tonight, what was your outcome? Anyone?
Knowledge.
Knowledge, okay.
To see you.
To see me, all right.
Right.
Yeah, but did you, okay, so I didn't need to say anything, right?
Oh, yes.
Then you didn't come to just see me. I could have gone, you know, and then we would have been done. Right, yeah, so see is a highly packed term.
Yes.
Right. And what are some of the criteria in C? To hear me. Hi, Nicole. How are you this evening? That we're done.
Yeah, right.
No, I don't think we're done if I just say hi to you.
No.
No. So what else?
Know what you have to say.
So okay. So in Derek's case, the outcome was knowledge right at the top, but in your case, you had it embedded in the criteria, yeah? What if we go over, for example, to the course a year from now with the two of you? And I realize we're only using two data points, but you got to start a science experiment somewhere. So moving out to a year or a course that you committed to that takes longer, what about outcomes?
Knowledge,
okay. This is similarity of structure, like identical, okay. And okay, so they are the same. And then what you did is what you did in both cases to decide the same or not. Like, did it have the same number of steps? Were the steps at the same chunk size or not?
Same steps, different chunk size.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the same steps. So there was a pattern there as well. But the chunk, what do you, give me an example, if you will.
Well, I was comparing tonight versus practitioner training.
Okay.
When I went to practitioner training, I went through each weekend. I just repeated the process on a whole bunch of different, you know, each weekend part of my strategy is what am I going to be giving up in time.
So you had to decide to come to each weekend, like you had to, yes. Leslie used to talk about people like this, and she said, now, she said, here's the thing, is that people in life, they decide what they're going to do today, and then they go do it or not. She says, but, and then this is, and then people then decide things like they go to college, or they're going to finish college, and then they don't make the decision for like 4 years till they finish. And what she was working with in terms of health programs, whether it was weight control or health, however you want to think about it, was that people would decide every day to be healthy. And Leslie says, no, that's something you decide for 4 years, because you don't get up every day to decide whether you're going to college or not. And I said, I'm not saying anything. So there's a different way that we hold things. Like for some people, they make a decision for a year and they make it once. But what you're saying is that you ran this process for each of the sections.
In advance, when I was deciding, am I
going to go? Oh, okay. That's much more sensible than what I did. But you ran each of those in first section, second section,
and after I reached
April, May, June, whatever the months were.
Once
yeah.
I reached a certain level of interest, okay, I'll deal with the weekends I can't make.
Okay.
It seems to me that that's the same. The chunk size is different. But it's really the same, because proportionately you're saying, is the amount of learning worth it for the amount of time that I have to invest in them?
So once we could also say that in terms of the doing, or what was known in Pribram and so forth work, is that the operation of the strategy was also a fractal. It wasn't just the classes of the outcome, but also how one went about it. Okay. Well, when I started to think about this way, when I started to think about this stuff this way a few years back, I was quite chagrined, because if you think about it for a moment, and I'm going to encourage that, you'll realize that everything that they're claiming to teach you, well, everything, or at least around these two topics right away, that they're claiming to teach you in NLP and other courses like goal setting and planning and values clarification, you already know. You already know how to do it, because you did it to get to the course. We're going to teach you how to clarify values, but you had to clarify your values to decide to go to the course. We're going to teach you how to make better decisions. And it's like, well, you already made a pretty good decision. You came here. Well, this is great. I'm getting paid to teach people what they already know. I better not tell them. But my style is, no, I better tell them. Because this leads from NLP the way it's been taught, which is, we're going to teach you stuff you don't know. And I'm not saying that people have this idea that they know they're teaching you stuff they know. No, it's really, they're holding it in the idea, well, they don't know what a well-formed outcome is. They don't know the five qualities of a well-formed outcome, stated in the positive, initiated, maintained by self, sensory-based evidence, appropriate context, and ecological. They don't know this. I've got proof. You know, just look in their lives. They don't know it. But it's not true. You do know that. And I have proof. Lunch. You see, you go to lunch. At least, I mean, I'm assuming. I haven't seen all of you go to lunch. I've seen some of you go to lunch. But in this culture, I can take a fair assumption, given that the age you are, you know, you've gone and you've gotten yourself lunch. And what does that require? It requires a well-formed outcome. You got the lunch, right? Even if you got somebody else to drive you, you were doing it. I mean, you were getting the lunch. Even if somebody else paid for it, most of the time, you had to pick something out yourself. I mean, there may have been a couple times somebody picked it out for you, but most of the time, you were picking it out yourself, and you were either making it at home or you were buying it. Sensory-based evidence. Do you just eat anything for lunch? No, you have criteria, you have evidence for your lunch. And do you just walk into the nearest bank and have lunch? No, you know how to find appropriate contexts to have lunch. And ecological. Even if it's an all-you-can-eat salad bar, at some point we stop. Now, not only that, but most of you have the good sense to build enough rapport with the serving persons that they won't mangle your food or do something you wish they wouldn't, and they'll deliver it in a timely manner. So there's all of your practitioner NLP training. It's like it happens right in lunch.
It strikes me that maybe that's where some of the bigger societal problems come from, because...
From lunch?
No, from the similarity. Because if you look at what happens when you start scaling things up, like, say, a design project,
mm-hmm.
a two-week design project, and what something that a human being could accomplish in 2 weeks, and all the different sort of factors in how it operates and what it actually does when you're done with it versus one that's, like a 10-man-year project. The 10-man-year project, there's going to be things that it does that nobody designed in. They're just sort of...
A lot of lunches.
...side effect kind of consequences of the design. It wasn't that somebody thought it through and decided that that's what they were going to do. It's just that when you got it all together, that was the behavior. Well, if you do everything on the small scale, the same as you do it on the large scale, no wonder we pick so much large scale stuff that isn't really very appropriate.
It's an interesting proposal. That scale at some point makes a difference. Let's back up here.
When they NORAD,
mm-hmm.
which is the system, the DO system, the distant early warnings system.
Yeah, back when we were defending ourselves against the Russians, yeah.
Well, they're still up there doing that. Well, the first time they turned this thing on, it worked great until about 7 o'clock at night when the moon came up. And they scrambled all of the bombers and the fighters across.
Well, it's a pretty big object in the sky.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was moving really fast, too. Tracked it perfectly.
So let's move it back here. And go, okay, does it work for lunch? I want you to each check a lunch. Did you have an outcome?
Yeah.
Did you have evidence for your lunch?
Yeah.
All right. You ever have a time like you went to lunch and the place was closed?
Yeah.
And did you not eat lunch? Yes. Did you have another time and you didn't? You went and did something else?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right. And you ever go to a restaurant and they run out of something? All right? And so on and so on. Okay, I just want you to know, I mean, have you all been to lunch more than once? Is this all right? Okay, good. So I want to be sure. So yeah, lunches do have well-formed outcomes, and they have evidence, and they have criteria, and you do things to get to order lunch, to get what you want for lunch. Yeah, okay. And you get the idea that it does, in fact, contain all of the well-formedness conditions. I mean, they are right there. And we're poor. Yeah.
It seems to me what you're teaching us, although being what we already know, what you're doing is you're taking us from the level of unconscious incompetence to unconscious competence, or at least conscious competence. It's what we've always done. NLP is what we've always done. We just didn't do it very well. I mean, we copied other people. That's how we've learned to
mm-hmm.
walk and talk and be
mm-hmm.
chaotic and compulsive.
And speak for certain people who, of course, never found their way here tonight. I mean,
but NLP is teaching us to do that, but without, the things we don't want. And that's what you're teaching us to do. What we've always done, just
mm-hmm.
do it better.
Well, yeah, I would agree, except that the assumption behind a lot of NLP training is I'm teaching you something you don't know how to do. What I have termed my own work is perceptual cybernetics, which came out of NLP. And it's I liked the term neurolinguistic programming when I first found it. I liked the programming. Programming meant it, you could change the program. So I'd not a programmer, but I'd taken enough programming that if you found the error in the program and then ran it again, it worked perfectly. It worked fine. There was nothing wrong with it. It just was missing a step, which is really different than having like to exercise your brain. And if you didn't, it would get flaccid. I mean, so I liked the programming metaphor a lot. And then I moved to a place where I like the word perceptual. That is more along what you were saying, that it's happening already all the time. It isn't like we're teaching you strategies or value clarification or framing or how to make something important with your submodalities. You already know how to do that. It's perceptual. And the other word, cybernetic, the reason I put that in was to emphasize the relational nature of it. That we don't do these things either in isolation of process. We just don't have just strategies. As you can see, the strategy diagram I've done with the two blocks has criteria in it, which is really from reframing. And if I ask you to think of your outcome, what your goal was in terms of that course, you could undoubtedly begin to paint some mental picture, which is the modalities. So there's a relationship, a cybernetic relationship between the models, between the aspects of yourself, mind and body, for example, spirit, and between us and the larger systems we're in. And the shift that I made in my own thinking was from teaching people to do things to having them notice what they're already doing and then begin to guide that process. So I'm, yeah.
So the main shift is in that of the trainer and their perspective.
I come in, I assume you're already an expert at this, you just haven't noticed how you're an expert at this. And as you begin to notice your processes more, then you can go, you know, I don't want to want that anymore, and you make the submodality smaller, or you say, I want to want something different, and you know how to shift it around. So with that in mind, then I began to play your question, the one earlier, about what happens in terms of scaling up. And so what I want to move from is, instead of what was the same about tonight in some course, what's different? But let's really also think in terms of shifting category. Let's begin to test this. So I'm going to ask you now to find another page and make some notes, because I'm going to ask you, what's the difference between lunch and life? Well, I thought we'd scale it up a bit.
You're looking for similarities or differences?
Differences.
Well, life is a bowl of cherries.
Okay. According to one living expert, life is a bowl of cherries. Now, once again,
you're asking us
lunch and life.
I'm asking
for an outcome for life.
For you. Yeah, because the theory, the model behind this, the fractal idea, is that it scales up. So, I mean, the people have goals for careers, people have goals about where they live. So I'm just pushing the edge of it, and let's scale it all the way up and go, so what's the difference between lunch and life? And personalize it, like your life.
So like most days, I skip lunch.
But you wouldn't want to skip life. Yes, write that down. That's what we're going for. What are the differences between lunch, a particular lunch, by the way, I mean, because that's what you're getting, comparing two experiences, because you want to find out what the tote's like, between lunch and life. You need to find lunch, you need to find life, yeah. I would say a particular lunch, or you could take a number of lunches, but step into them, you know, because that's the experience you have. You had the lunch, and you're comparing lunch and life. Does that qualify as a scaling up and comparing different categories? All right, good. Yeah.
Is it the decision of having lunch or lunch itself?
Good. Why don't we expand that a little bit? So yeah, not only the decision to have lunch, but like lunch, getting lunch. Yeah.
Deciding to go and getting it.
Yeah.
Okay. Through having it, right?
Yeah, longer criteria. So if it helps, you can go through the whole lunch experience. Yes.
So that's the similarity is the difference.
No, wait a minute. The similarity is the difference. That's a different seminar.
Okay, what I meant it's. Difference is the one is small and the one is large scale.
All right, so there's an obvious difference, but a difference. One is a smaller scale. Now, what do we mean by smaller scale?
Lunch is the period of time.
Period of time.
Yeah.
So looking at it like on our shell, it would be a little tiny piece at the bottom, whereas life would be the whole thing. Or looking at this branch that I have, this fern, is that lunch might be one little petal of this, and the life would be, okay, so there's a difference of scale, yeah. And go, okay, I want you to make some notes. I want you to go, okay, I have lunches, what are they like? Think about them in terms of these characteristics, outcome, evidence, criteria, what do you do? And then I want you to compare it with your life. Is it on? Evidence and criteria, that the evidence is for the outcome. So if you got a lunch, how would you know?
I would see it.
Right, okay. So then, as you look at that lunch, and as you eat that lunch, you have certain criteria, like is it fresh, is it warm, is it visually pleasing, is it properly prepared? Right, so those would be criteria, for example, in that situation. Okay, like before, I want you to get in groups and compare these. Now, some people are going, well, you know, a life is a life, but if that were true, why are you all dressed differently? I mean, if on the simplest level there's manifest differences, and I don't mean the biological and the two, you know, biological differences or age. I mean, these are outside our control in the sense we don't choose those when we're coming into this world. But everyone chose their clothing, where they're sitting tonight. And if you're changing at that small a scale, right, different, if you're each different at that small scale, then one could imagine, I'm not certain about this, you understand, that as you scaled up, the differences would get much larger. And then again, it might be the same pattern. So I would like you to get together with people and compare and contrast your answers and begin to find out, is there some stuff that begins to emerge in terms of patterning as you compare just three people? I know it's not much of a sample size, but it's enough to get started. It is not only for your experience, but for the three of you, what are the differences between lunch and life? Ready? Don't have too much fun, right? Meet me back here in about 10 minutes, so go ahead and make some notes about this as well. What are the differences between lunch and life? I must be getting better at least looking serious when I say this, because a couple of years back when I first started to ask groups about this, I was in Brittany, in northern France, very mixed group. There were French and German and English and Americans, and I began to ask this in Dutch and so a lot of different countries. And I began to ask them, what's your lunch and life? And they just threw up their hands like, no, we're not even going to compare them. But when they began to find both similarities and differences. What did you find?
Similarities and differences.
Like, for instance, similarities and differences such as?
If we're going into something nice and non-scalar, we could say food and not food.
Okay. So one is about food and one is not about food.
Not about food, yeah. That's a non-scalar difference.
Okay.
Scalar difference would be like time it takes, money invested.
Okay, so the time it takes, lunch and life tend to be on different time scales. The amount of money you spend on lunch doesn't tend to equal the amount of money you're going to spend in your life. Okay, what other differences?
Comparing the chunk size, when I mm-hmm. look at lunch, my criteria for lunch tends to be something different as an important chunk size, mm-hmm. thinking of food.
Mm-hmm.
In life, the chunk sizes are like, where do I work, where do I live, and what are my relationships like? I want something more stable. So there's a criteria of stability in the big life chunk size versus variety in the lunch.
What do you think of that? I mean, to me, I what you first said, that the amount of time it takes and the amount of money you spend is different. But we go, well, yeah, that's what scale is. But what I'm saying, what I found is interesting, what you just said, is that there's a shift in terms of a category of criteria. Whatever is in that criteria, you're saying on the lunch level, tends to be different than the criteria for life. Is that... Try that out for yourself. Is that fit for a number of you or not? I mean, that's interesting. So, the criteria, for example, or let's try another way to phrase that. In terms of the criteria, you have more varied criteria for lunch than you have for life. And that sometimes certain criteria for lunch are there and some aren't, whereas the criteria for life tend to remain more stable. Would that also be a fair description?
Yeah.
And the rest of you, what is that, does that work or not?
Right, yeah, I could say it that way.
Yeah.
There's more for lunch, is what you're saying.
No, I mean, what I'm saying is that out of the criteria for lunch, there's more variability of criteria, that you would have certain criteria certain days for certain lunches, whereas with your life criteria, it tends to remain more stable. You don't tend to, like, one day have five criteria and then go, you know, I'm going to throw out a couple of those. And then a few days later go, I'm going to put them back. But we do that with lunch.
And yet over a period of time in life, we may actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's scale again. So that you may actually have some criteria at one point in life and then throw them out and then but then bring them back in later.
So maybe that's not a difference.
I mean,
that's what we're testing for.
Yes.
What else? Differences? Yeah, Nicole.
Well, I have a big similarity here in my criteria. In the food, I want something healthy, and I especially want variety also. And in life, I want variety. And, pronounce it right. Mm-hmm. And also, I want to acquire knowledge for me is food.
Well, I could also reach there and say, and you want a healthy variety in your life experiences, or do you want an unhealthy variety? Right, so actually, in her case, she's saying the criteria tend to stay the same. Okay, so this would argue for scalar phenomena, yeah.
I'm not sure about this, but it seems that lunch seems to be more environment, behavior, where life seems to be more beliefs, values, spirit.
Okay. What about the rest of you?
Yeah,
all right, so the criteria, was that criteria the outcomes? What? Hey, just if you were to pick a category or not.
I don't understand the question.
Well, you're saying some quality about life, and I'm saying does it fit into one of the categories we've talked about? Like, is it part of the outcome, is it part of the evidence, part of the criteria for life? It's about beliefs versus...
Oh, yeah, well, like in life, part of, I guess that would be... criteria.
Mm-hmm. If you look at it linguistically, could I make the following suggestion? That lunch criteria tends to be more adjectives. Is it warm? Is it pretty? Is it well prepared? Is it crunchy? Whereas life criteria tends to be more nominalizations. Is it satisfying? Is it fulfilling? Is it spiritual? Is it worthwhile? These are all nominalizations in the linguistic model that we borrow on. So there, does that fit for a number of people? So when this happens, when it changes from one scale to another, that's known as a discontinuity. That is that there's some sort of a jump that takes place that argues that it's not a scalar phenomena. That it isn't like the calculus and you can scale it all the way up and it's always the same. Yeah. Anything else? Differences? Yeah. John.
What I started to say, you jokingly finished my statement. When you asked the question, what is the outcome of life, you hooked me into what amounts to, I can't even say what it is. There's nothing to say other than, I have it already, I've always had it, I will always have it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent a couple of minutes being sort of stuck there, because here where I was, you know, like, well, what is my outcome? It's like, I'm real clear what it is. It's right here, but I can't talk about it. And then I kind of came down to something a little bit smaller that's kind of more conventional, like life. And there are some similarities here, but it was just interesting to me. You know, somehow when you said outcome, it's like, okay, well, that's like the whole package, the significance of it in the largest way.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in that, and that's totally incomparable with lunch, and it just doesn't compute. And
okay.
The other one I did notice you know, as I mm-hmm. started to think about it, there are some kind of similarities there.
So let's pose the question. How many of you earlier today knew what you wanted for lunch? All right. How many of you earlier today knew what you wanted for life? So does that mean, does that argue that they're really the same?
Well, life is nothing but a good lunch.
So as you examine the two outcomes, were they the same? Was the quality of the outcomes the same? Say more about that.
Well, what I just got really quickly was a size thing, a lunch, like that.
Lunch, life. Right, but the thing is, all I'm saying is that as you think of the outcome for lunch, what was the outcome for lunch? Okay, feel satisfied, something to eat, refuel, whatever. And then what's the outcome for life? What's that?
Certainly arguable, but it's the same.
All right.
However, I would...
So life is lunch. If a metaphor, as it was noted.
You have to take life with a grain of salt.
Well, someone had already gone down the path that I was thinking of, where they go, everything I needed to know in life I learned at lunch.
There is no free lunch.
So they're the same. Is this what we're arguing?
To me, the difference I have, they're similar in that I both want an enjoyable experience, but you know, for me in life, there's a whole relationship there between my creator and myself, what I wrote down specifically was enjoy myself while praising my creator, where at lunch I want to enjoy myself, but it doesn't really have a whole
lot. This guy's going like, whether your creator shows up or not.
That's great.
Well, now that's very interesting, because I was going to pursue the opposite. In fact, I am. Is that, this is where we're going to go, how many of you have been to lunch more than once? And how about life? That you remember. So what I would argue is that the periodicity that you have a lot of lunches, but you don't have a lot of lives. Now, check it out. Because some people hold it differently. Because I was in Brittany, I was in France, and when somebody said, life is a very good lunch. And I went, you know, no, lunch is good for a lot. I mean, it was interesting how we held the scale there. And most people don't hold them on the same scale. People have a lot of lunches, but they don't have a lot of lives. Yeah?
Lunch is a time limited.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas life is open-ended.
Up until the end.
With a guarantee.
But it's open-ended.
But my point is, the perception of it is, if you sit down to lunch, you expect it's going to last, well, life too. So I guess they're the same.
From birth to death, but, you know, when is this? It's open-ended.
Okay, for a lunch, you decide to stop. Life, you wait.
Most people. Yeah.
There's some ways in which I view my life as being more than one life, because there are such differences in mm-hmm. because there are phases of it for me. So I don't know. I'm trying to play that about. In that way, it feels more like lunches again. You know, multiple lunches, multiple phases of life.
Right.
Each had a different menu.
Now here's the thing, because I've caused you to struggle this evening. That's what you get for showing up.
That's why we take.
Now here's the thing: is I have thought about this, as you can imagine, And we have a lot of lunches. And in the process of having a lot of lunches, we learn to do certain things. For instance, we go to a certain, that's why I prefaced all the things that I said. We go to a restaurant and it's closed. So then do we not have lunch? Sometimes. But mostly we go to another restaurant. In other words, we go back down into our strategy. We find another place. We go to this other place. We know what we want to have. They don't have what we want. What do? We adjust our criteria and pick something else. In other words, because of the number of iterations of lunch, people have a very rich representation of their strategies and how they're going to do lunch, that they have many alternatives, shifting criteria, shifting outcomes. Whereas, as people scale things up, I've noticed that this tends to drop away. Also, sorting by differences is more variety and shifting of criteria and strategies. People have a lot of strategies for getting lunch, a lot of ways to shift criteria and still feel good about what they got. Whereas as you scale up to, and I, by the way, sometimes when I have more time, I put love in the middle. Because that's another one, and I'll explain. It's also what I call above the line. It's also above the line. So you scale up to love, and people then, if they don't, somebody, they want somebody, and that person doesn't want them, they don't go back and re-decide. They stop, or they go, but I want you, you know, and it just, so they don't have that flexibility that they obviously actually have if it were lunch.
That's the they that are in a different room.
In another room, I understand. Not anyone here, of course. And the varying of criteria, allowing different criteria about to shift the outcome, doesn't happen with life, does happen with lunch, which is really curious because it means we have the abilities. Now, another thing that happens with life is that people are very clear, or often are clear, what they want for lunch. Or even if they're not clear what they want for lunch, they can reflect on it and go, well, that was a good lunch. Whereas people tend to not have well-developed criteria for life, particularly don't tend to have well-developed evidence. You might have well-developed criteria. You want fulfillment and satisfaction and worthwhileness and so forth. But you check the evidence under life, and it tends to be poorly developed. Whereas the evidence under lunch tends to be well developed. Once again, the number of iterative experiences allows you to have a very rich representation. Yes?
Do you mean that one way to women that is to have goals and to check on, to really check where we are and where we are going more often, and that gives us the, do you think that would give us more a better way to qualify where we are in life, and if life is
well, okay,
or not,
mm-hmm. So I'm going to hold off on that, and I'll come back to it. You're actually going to, then what do you do once you notice these differences? Okay. I'm now talking about differences. Does this encourage you to notice any other differences? Yeah, Rick.
In the lunch, I tend to use my criteria to limit my choices. So, like,
use criteria to exclude things.
To exclude things.
Right.
I go to a restaurant, and then I'll look at the menu, and I'll pick one thing, and then I get it. I won't be in the middle of eating my lunch and say, well, thank God, maybe I'll go have some of that, right? Unless it's some kind of, you know, buffet.
Right.
But then I have a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. Where in life, I tend to open my choices as much as possible instead of exclude them.
Right.
Because I've already feel, you know, it's like, well, I'd like more choices. So in the middle of life, I'm steering all over the place, even though I have criteria that may be more stable. In the middle of lunch, even though my criteria may be more varied, as I use that criteria, I'm limiting my choices as narrowly as possible so I can make a decision.
Yeah, now I'm not saying everyone does that, but that to me is really interesting, that that sort of thing happens. Now, what do I mean by above and below the line? Below the line, I draw these maps, and of course, if I'm teaching a seminar, there's going to be a map. That if you make some simple distinctions, like put abstract at the top of the page and put sensory-based at the bottom, that things can be sensory-based in, like, how does the pen feel as you make a note about this? You can scale it up to looking at the words on the page. You can scale it up to, or scope, actually scoping, because you're just creating the view. You can scope out to where you're taking a note in this seminar. And as soon as you go, well, what are you taking that note for? To remember. Well, that's still sensory-based, so you could say, okay, you remember. And what's important about remembering? Well, remembering is close enough to it. You go like knowledge, right?
And to apply it.
Application, right. You go from the adjectives to the nominalizations, which in the meta model is generalization. So you're going from the class of deletion, included or deleted phenomena, which, by the way, is what it should be called, included and deleted, not just deletion. It's included and deleted phenomena, to the level of generalizations, which is the next model up. Because a nominalization is a kind of generalization. It generalizes out the action. And that criteria, this is one of the great dividing lines in criteria, is between adjectives and nominalizations. As long as human beings are making their choices below the line, which is to say sensory-based, then all of the stuff that you've got, the strategies, evaluations, criteria, frames, submodalities, language patterns, people are fairly competent at these. They can get a lunch. Now, we're not saying that they understand what the four food groups are, you know, but it'll meet their criteria. And so they can get their outcomes, you know, they can meet people, they can do things. It's in this sensory world. As soon as you, and as soon as you step above that into ideas of satisfaction, understanding, knowledge, learning, commitment, relationship, intimacy, success, whatever those words are for you, then, and that's where more and more we were living in the last 100 years. I mean, you just look at the shift in work, which is, you know, I'm bringing in sociology of history here, but you look how 100 years ago, most people didn't work in factories. You drop back 120 years and something like, and I won't have the exact number, but I know it's over 80% of people lived on farms. And they were with the seasons. In fact, it may shock you to know that it was in 1886 that time zones began to be established. Before that, what time was it? Whatever the clock said in your town. And so there's been a tremendous shift from a sensory-based world to a nominalized, mental, abstract world where people are responding to these ideas like, I want to be successful, you know, I want to be in a relationship. It used to be you wanted to meet somebody and get married and have sex and make babies. Now you want to be in a relationship, which is much more abstract. So as we as creatures have come to a time in the our evolution, I'm presuming it's evolutionary, history will decide this, not us, we're much more nominalized. And when things get nominalized, when you want love, I mean, once again, drop back 100 years, people didn't get married because of love. That was a bonus. That was like, yowie wowie, you were one of the real lucky ones if you married somebody you loved. And in Asia, you can tell this is still the case because there's a tradition. All love stories end badly. In Asian tradition, that's right, they're tragedies. because love upsets the natural order. The natural order is people find an appropriate mate for you, and you get together, and maybe you learn to love each other over time. Now, I'm not saying we go back to that in any way. I'm just making a contrastive difference as we get off of the sensory-based realm and go into desiring to fulfill ourselves. Got that, right? Nomination. By meeting these concepts. The idea of designing a life, it's a postmodern idea. It's a very, very modern idea. It used to be you didn't design a life, you had a life. But now people don't have a life until they've designed it. Or in the words of John Lennon, is life is what happens while you were planning for something else. There's a guy ahead of his time in any number of ways. Life is when you're busy planning for something else, right on the back there. Thank you very much.
Like I said, Charles, an advanced seminar.
Yes, in advanced seminar, yes. Now, this is not an argument against success, fulfillment, achievement, intimacy, relationship. Not at all. I mean, and these are a few of my favorite things. What I'm arguing for is noticing how when you do that, sometimes the evidence gets greatly reduced. Which does what, Rick? Because you've experienced it.
Well, and everything's kind of like expanded out. You go, where do I go?
Because?
Because I'm not limiting by making choices.
And why aren't you limiting by making choices? It's not a why, but there's a functional process here.
I don't know what I want.
Oh, you do know what you want.
Well,
you're expanding your choices. But he actually said it. He knows what he wants, but the evidence for it is sketchy, rather than being rich, and so he can get distracted. I know about this. I've done this too. You can get distracted from one desire to another, because you get fragments of evidence that go, oh, this could be love. Oh, this could be success. Whereas you know whether the salad is fresh or not when they bring it. I mean, there's degrees of freshness, but they bring it and you go, that's a good salad, you know, or that's a good steak, or whatever your favorite food is. But somebody goes, stock options, you know, IPO, you know, and whatever those words are, and you get drawn to them. Or they go fast track or something, or you get a certain smile. Somebody smiles you a certain way and you go, whoa, you know. Whereas you would never accept that from a salad or a steak. You would want a richer representation in your food. Or as one wise man used to say, is that men decide to which women to marry. This is in the choice realm in the last 50-100 years. Men decide which women to marry in light they wouldn't buy a watch by.
And vice versa.
And vice versa. Thank you. I was waiting for the French response here. Yes. So, it's very curious to me that it isn't merely about noticing these differences. It's what we can begin to do noticing these differences. I mean, it's where we're going with this. It's not merely an amusing and interesting exercise. I hope it's that. It makes the learning more fun. But it's like, okay, so we have these kinds of differences, that there's a definite difference in the kind of criteria. Nominalizations versus adjectives. There's a definite difference in the criteria. Evidences. The evidences for lunch have very rich VAKs. The evidences for life tend to be sketchier, and of course they're based directly on the criteria. The outcomes of lunch are more specific in time, naturally, lunch is a time-limited event, and more highly iterative. I'm going to come back to that. That's the idea that you're willing to have a bad lunch, or at least a mediocre one, because you expect to have another one. And yet people will give themselves a mediocre life while hoping, in John Lennon's phrase, to paraphrase John Lennon, hoping that they're going to get a better life. Does that make sense? Let me try that one again. Is that people can often have better lunches because once in a while they'll accept a mediocre lunch, maybe even a lot of the time, but they'll know it's time limited and I can make it better. People want better lives, but often will accept ones that aren't, thinking that at some point it'll get better instead of it's time limited and going, I'll put up with a bad life this week, but not next week. You know, just like you'll go, okay, we'll go to some fast food. I was going to name a fast food place, but I won't denigrate them. I go eat at some of them. But you eat at a fast food place. You say you eat at a fast food place today, and you eat at a fast food place tomorrow, and then you and I, and you go, no, I'm not going there. Let's go. They have great Italian food here, you know, or wherever. And so you go, yeah. And so the iterativeness, by which I mean the specific repetition, affects the future event. Whereas in life, the stream of event affects it differently. Yes?
I was struck as you were talking, and I think this kind of points in the direction that I was thinking, where I kind of got stuck, is you said, you talked about getting a life or getting a better life.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that you've had one since the beginning, and you will continue to have one, and you don't get to exchange them. You have the same life from beginning to end.
And you don't.
And you don't. Yeah.
Right, so that's the thing. And you do. Yeah, so he's saying
you can't get a better life. You have a life.
Right, right. Yeah, it's the continuous versus the iterative.
But I mean, your very way of talking about it kind of points in the wrong direction. Because it doesn't map to the structure that, I mean,
it is intentional. It is intentional on my part.
Okay.
I just,
yeah, sure.
Because, you know, I have quite a varied life.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't associate with who I used to be.
So. Right. Very interesting. He's saying, I wouldn't hang out with who I used to be now. I mean, it's like I have a different life than I did before. And also John's comment, and it's the same life. And it's not something you get. It's something you are a part of, or you are, depending on how you sort that.
Let's put it this way, if you're making the meal comparison, I dine at a very fine table now, and before, it wasn't that way.
Okay.
You know, before it was the homeless shelter.
Now, the other part of the iterativeness is because you've run lunch so many times, you have a highly varied strategy, or can have a highly varied strategy about what to do in the face of obstacles, what to do in the face of setbacks, how to get there quickest, how to make it last longer when you want. In other words, you can condense time, you can expand time, you can condense choices, you can expand choices, either by the events influencing that. You go to the restaurant, it's closed, you go to the restaurant, they don't have what you want, you go to the restaurant, they have five things you want. You know, whereas most people don't tend to have that relationship to life. They either got one way they're doing life, or they're not even sure about the one way they're doing life.
Or they think other people are doing it for them.
Okay, or they think other people are doing it either for or to them, yes. So there's that experiential difference. So it doesn't scale, does it? Well, I mean, because it's supposed to be self-similarity of structure with invariance to scale. And we found all these differences. Yes, we have. Because there's an underlying principle in science, you knew I had to get this lecture in somewhere, being based on mathematics, you know, the mathematification, that's nice, the mathematification. How would I really say it? What?
Mathematicization,
right? Yes, that's the one, yeah, the mathematicalization, but I like the other one. The mathematicalization of everything, of the quantification of so much of life, can be traced in a sense back to the calculus. The calculus was, how do you deal with infinity? How do you deal with the area under a curve? How do you take every element and scale it up? And this is known in economics, for that next cocktail your party you're at, as marginalism. It's the idea that everything can be measured and there's a measure for everything. And while you can do this with a model, it turns out you can't do this with dynamic living systems. That what you will get is a discontinuity, a leap, where something jumps from one state, way of being, and unpredictably jumps to another. It is, by the way, considered in certain traditions to be an act of the sacred. That it is the nature of something that is dynamic and participating that there are these leaps, as it were, into the unknown. And that each of us have that in our nature. We have both. We do pay specific amounts of money for lunch. And we also have these leaps in terms of from one kind of criteria to another. So the question now becomes, knowing this, what do we do, or what is possible for us to do if we wish to do anything with it? I like to put it on the board like this because this gives you an observer position, a third position to look at it. How does this assist you in rethinking how you hold your life, for example? I mean, if you wish to. And then again, at this point, it's like even thinking about this can induce change. So the invitation is to participate or not, depending on what you'd like to do. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that struck me after thinking about it is that, you know, in the largest sense, it's a done deal. I don't need to think about it at all. And so I kind of took this, at the point at which I realized that, I kind of took this whole issue and went, I don't need to think about this because it's taken care of.
And
so what's happened is that since that point in time, I haven't really kind of thought about it in the smaller sense, and I haven't set outcomes or goals or, you know, I've just kind of driven through.
Now, this would argue, if I may, this would argue for the idea that it's going to grow anyway.
Yeah.
That one, in a sense, doesn't need to have life goals because you'll continue as long as it grows. And, you know, in that sense, there might be a little shell or a big shell for your life. It's just however it goes. That it is organic, for example. What else? I mean, that's very important. So let's... So the idea would argue that life grows. That it isn't something you need to manage with outcomes and so forth. It's a done deal, was your phrase. Yeah. You can't stop it from growing. You can't start it. It's going to happen. It's a natural thing. Yeah. What else, Derek?
I don't know that I agree with that, because unlike a seashell or a tree that's going to grow a certain way, we can choose how we're going to grow. We can choose at the rate at which we grow. You know, we can choose to either grow really fast or we can choose to grow really slow. We can really choose the direction that we go in life.
There's that, but that isn't quite what I was meaning.
Mm-hmm.
What I meant is that the outcome, is a done deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need to think about evidence. I don't need to think about criteria. All I need to do is, like, think about the outcome of life in the largest sense, and it's just, it's, I know, it's just right there. It's here, it's now.
So it's not in the future?
At any time.
Yeah.
It's just, it's right here, as opposed to, you know, so it's not like the light, the outcome of my life is to live life. It's, I don't even want to go there, but mm-hmm. it's not, it, so it's not, yours is more, I mean, you, I think you were coming at it more from like a more sensory base.
Yeah.
Well, I'm seeing a difference in time, is that yours is a present, that it isn't here now, and yours is like, well, there's some future possibility that I can use to turn it into something else.
It will leverage, absolutely. You look yeah. at where I am today, and it's like a fulcrum. I can put a little bit of a change here, and where that'll put me 20 or 30 years from now will be radically different as opposed to if I didn't do that.
Okay, so that would...
And the point I was really trying to get at was what mine is personal, and my guess would be that if you... saw what I saw, that you would agree with me.
Yes, if he saw it your way, he would be you.
Right. I don't necessarily expect you to see it that way, and I don't expect it to apply to you.
Okay. So others, what's, yeah, Rick?
Well, I think I've been on a different planet here for a little bit. When you were talking about the leap,
mm-hmm.